You like that, Fry? The veneer of civilization? He slowly sweeps his hand in the air as he says it, like he's feeling the fine finish of a table. My dads are always saying stuff like that. Sci-Fi's a runaway, although he claims not to be. I ain't no runaway. I'm a run, too. He had told Lev when they first met, although he won't tell Lev where he's running to. When Lev asked, Sci-Fi shook his head and said, "Information shall be given on a need-to-know basis." Well, he can keep his secret, because Lev doesn't care where he's going. The simple fact that he has a destination is enough for Lev. It's more than Lev has. Destination implies a future. If this umber-skinned boy can lend Lev that much, it's worth it to travel with him. They had met at a mall. Hunger had driven Lev there. He had hidden in dark, lonely places for almost 2 days after he lost Connor and Risa. With no experience being a street rat, he went hungry. But eventually, hunger turns anyone into a master of survival. The mall was a mecca for a newborn street rat. The food court was full of amazingly wasteful people. The trick, Lev discovered, was to find people who bought more food than they could possibly eat, and then wait until they were done. About half the time, they just left it on the table. Those were the ones Lev went after. Because he might have been hungry enough to eat table scraps, but he was still too proud to rifle through the trash. While Lev was finishing off some cheerleader's pizza, he heard a voice in his ear. "You ain't gotta be eating other folks' garbage, foo!" Lev froze, certain it was a security guard ready to haul him away. But it was only this tall umber kid with a funny grin, wearing attitude like it was a cologne. "Let me show you how it's done." Then he went to a pretty girl who was working at the Wicked Walk Chinese food concession, flirted with her for a few minutes, then left with nothing. No food, no drink, nothing. "I think I'll stick to leftovers," Lev had told him.
"Patience, my man. See, it's getting on toward closing time. All these places by law gotta get rid of all the food they made today. They can't keep it and reuse it tomorrow. So where do you think that food goes? I'll tell you where it goes. It goes home with the last shift. But the people who work these places ain't gonna eat that stuff on account of they're sick to death of it. See that girl I was talking to? She likes me. I told her I worked at Shirt Bonanza downstairs and could get her some overstock, maybe."
"Do you work there?"
"No! Are you even listening to me? So anywho, right before closing, I'm gonna get myself over to the Wicked Walk again. I'll give her a smile, and I'll be all like, 'Hey, what you gonna do with all that leftover food?' And she'll be all like, 'What you got in mind?' And 5 minutes later, I'm walking away in orange chicken heaven, with enough to feed an army."
And sure enough, it happened exactly like he said it would. Lev was amazed.
"Stick with me," Sci-Fi had said, putting his fist in the air. "And as God is my witness, you will never go hungry again." Then he added, "That's from Gone with the Wind."
"I know," said Lev, which, in fact, he didn't. Lev had agreed to go with him because he knew the two filled a need in each other. Sci-Fi was like a preacher with no flock. He couldn't exist without an audience, and Lev needed someone who could fill his head with ideas to replace the lifetime of ideas that had been taken from him. A day later, Lev's shoes are worn and his muscles are sore. The memory of Risa and Connor is still a fresh wound, and it doesn't want to heal. Chances are, they were caught. Chances are, they've been unwound. All because of him. Does that make him an accomplice to murder?
How could it, when unwinds aren't really dead?
He doesn't know whose voice is in his head anymore. His father's? Pastor Dan's? It just makes him angry. He'd rather hear Sci-Fi's voice outside of his head than whatever voices were inside. The terrain around them hasn't changed much since they left town. Eye-high shrubs and a smattering of trees. Some of the growth is evergreen, some of it yellow, turning brown. Weeds grow up between the train tracks, but not too tall.
"Any weed dumb enough to grow tall ain't got no chance. It gets decapitated by the next train that comes through. Decapitated, that means head cut off."
"I know what decapitated means. And you can stop talking that way, all double negatives and stuff." Sci-Fi stops right there in the middle of the railroad tracks and stares at Lev like he's trying to melt him with his eyes.
You got a problem with the way I talk? You got a problem with an old-world umber patois?
I do when it's fake.
What you talking about, foo?
It's obvious. I'll bet people never even said things like foo, except on dumb pre-war TV shows and stuff. You're speaking wrong on purpose.
Wrong? What makes it wrong? It's classic, just like those TV shows. And I ain't appreciating you disrespecting my patois. Patois means,
I know what it means, Lev says, even though he isn't entirely sure.
I ain't stupid.
Sci-Fi puts up an accusing finger like a lawyer.
Aha! You said ain't. Now who's talking wrong?
That doesn't count. I said it because it's all I hear from you. After a while, I can't help but sound like you.
At that, Sci-Fi grins.
Yeah, he says. Ain't that the truth? Old world umber is contagious. It's dominant. And talking the talk don't make a person dumb. I have you know I got the highest reading and writing score in my school, Fry. But I gotta respect my ancestors and all they went through so I could be here. Sure, I can talk like you, but I choose not to. It's like art, you know? Picasso had to prove to the world he can paint the right way before he goes putting both eyes on one side of a face and noses sticking out of kneecaps and stuff. See, if you paint wrong because that's the best you can do, you just a chump. But you do it because you want to, then you're an artist.
He smiles at Lev.
That's a bit of Sci-Fi wisdom right there, Fry. You can take that to the grave and dig it up when you need it.
Sci-Fi turns and spits out a piece of gum that hits a train rail and sticks there. Then he shoves another piece in his mouth.
Anyway, my dad's got no problem with it, and they're Lily Sienna like you.
They? Sci had said dad's before, but Lev had figured it was just some more old umber slang.
Yeah? Says Sci-Fi with a shrug. I got two. Ain't no thang.
Lev tries his best to process this. Of course, he's heard of male parenting, or yin families, as they're currently called. But in the sheltered structure of his life, such things always belong to an alternate universe. Sci-Fi, however, doesn't even catch Lev's surprise. He's still on his brag jag.
Yeah, I got myself an IQ of 155. You know that, Fry? Course not. How would you know?
Then he hesitates.
It went down a few points, though, on account of the accident. I was on my bike and got hit by some damn fool in a Mercedes.
He points to a scar on the side of his head.
What a mess! Splattered, you know? I was nearly roadkill. It turned my right temporal lobe into jello.
He shivers as he thinks about it, then shrugs.
But brain damage ain't a problem like it used to be. They just replaced the brain tissue and you're as good as new. My dad's even paid off the surgeon so I get an entire temporal lobe from an unwind. No offense. Rather than getting a bunch of brain bits like people are supposed to get.
Lev knows about that. His sister, Kara, has epilepsy. So they replaced a small part of her brain with 100 tiny brain bits. It took care of the problem, and she didn't seem any worse for it. It had never occurred to Lev where those tiny pieces of brain tissue might have come from.
See, brain bits work okay, but they don't work great, Sci-Fi explains. It's like putting spackle over a hole in the wall. No matter how well you do it, that wall ain't never gonna be as good. So my dad's made sure I got an entire temporal lobe from a single donor. But that kid wasn't as smart as me. He wasn't no dummy, but he didn't have the 155. The last brain scan put me at 130. That's in the top 5% of the population, and still considered genius. Just not with a capital G. What's your IQ?
He asks Lev.
Are you a dim bulb or a high wattage?
Lev sighs. I don't know. My parents don't believe in intelligence scans. It's kind of a religious thing. Everyone's equal in God's eyes and all that.
Oh, you come from one of those families.
Sci-Fi takes a good look at him.
So if they all high and mighty, why are they unwinding you?
Although Lev doesn't want to get into it, he figures Sci-Fi is the only friend he's got. Might as well tell him the truth. I'm a tithe. Sci-Fi looks at him with eyes all wide, like Lev just told him he was God himself.
Damn! So you all holy and stuff?
Not anymore. Sci-Fi nods and purses his lips, saying nothing for a while. They walk along the tracks. The railroad ties change from wood to stone, and the gravel on the side of the tracks now seems better maintained.
We just crossed the state line, Sci-Fi says.
Lev would ask him which state they've crossed into, but he doesn't want to sound stupid. Any spot where multiple tracks merge or diverge, there's a little two-story shack standing there like a displaced lighthouse, a railroad switch house. There are plenty of them along this stretch of the line, and these are the places Lev and Sci-Fi find shelter each night.
Aren't you afraid someone from the railroads will find us here?
Lev asks as they approach one of the sorry-looking structures.
Nah, they ain't used anymore, Sci-Fi tells him. The whole system's automated. Been that way for years. But it costs too much to tear all those switch houses down. Guess they figure nature will eventually tear them down for free.
The switch house is padlocked, but a padlock is only as strong as the door it's on. And this door had been routed by termites. A single kick rips the padlock hasp from the wood, and the door flies inward to a shower of dust and dead spiders. Upstairs is an 8x8 room, windows on all four sides. It's freezing. Sci-Fi has an expensive-looking winter coat that keeps him warm at night. Lev only has a puffy, fiber-filled jacket that he stole from a chair at the mall the other day. Sci-Fi had turned his nose up when he saw Lev take that jacket, just before they left the mall.
Stealing's for lowlives, Sci had said. If you got class, you don't steal what you need. You get other people to give it to you of their own free will. Just like I did back at the Chinese place. It's all about being smart and being smooth. You'll learn.
Lev's stolen jacket is white, and he hates it. All his life he'd worn white, a pristine absence of color that defined him. But now there was no comfort in wearing it. They eat well that night, thanks to Lev, who finally had his own survivalist brainstorm. It involved small animals killed by passing trains.
I ain't eating no track kill,
Sci-Fi insisted when Lev had suggested it.
Those things could have been rotting out here for weeks, for all we know.
No, Lev told him. Here's what we do. We walk a few miles down the tracks, marking each dead critter with a stick. Then, when the next train comes through, we backtrack. Anything we find that's not marked is fresh. Granted, it was a fairly disgusting idea on the surface, but it was really no different from hunting, if your weapon were a diesel engine. They build a small fire beside the switch house and dine on roast rabbit and armadillo, which doesn't taste as bad as Lev thought it would. In the end, meat is meat, and barbecue does for armadillo exactly what it does for steak.
Smorgasbash!
Sci-Fi decides to call this hunting method as they eat.
That's what I call creative problem-solving. Maybe you're a genius after all, Fry.
It feels good to have Sci's approval.
Hey, is today Thursday? Says Lev, just realizing. I think it's Thanksgiving.
Well, Fry, we're alive. That's plenty to be thankful for.
That night, up in the small room of the switch house, Sci-Fi asks the big question.
Why'd your parents tithe you, Fry?
One of the good things about being with Sci-Fi is that he talks about himself a lot. It keeps Lev from having to think about his own life. Except, of course, when Sci asks. Lev answers him with silence, pretending to be asleep. And if there's one thing he knows Sci-Fi can't stand, it's silence. So he fills it himself.
Were you a stork baby, is that it? They didn't want you in the first place, and couldn't wait to get rid of you?
Lev keeps his eyes closed and doesn't move.
Well, I was stalked, Sci says. My dad's got me on the doorstep the first day of summer. No big deal. They were ready to have a family anyway. In fact, they were so pleased, they finally made it official and got themselves married.
Lev opens his eyes, curious enough to admit he's still awake.
But after the Heartland War, didn't they make it illegal for men to get married?
They didn't get married, they got married.
What's the difference?
Sci-Fi looks at him like he's a moron.
The letter M? Anyway, in case you're wondering, I'm not like my dad's. My compass points to girls, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, mine does too.
What he doesn't tell Sci-Fi is that the closest he's ever been to a date, or even kissing a girl, was the slow dancing at his tithing party. The thought of the party brings a sudden and sharp jolt of anxiety that makes him want to scream, so he squeezes his eyes tight and forces that explosive feeling to go away. Everything from Lev's old life is like that now, a ticking time bomb in his head.
Forget that life, he tells himself. You're not that boy anymore.
What are your parents like?
Sci-Fi asks. I hate them, Lev says, surprised that he said it. Surprised that he means it.
That's not what I asked.
This time, Sci isn't taking silence for an answer, so Lev tells him as best he can.
My parents, he begins, do everything they're supposed to. They pay their taxes, they go to church, they vote the way their friends expect them to vote, and think what they're supposed to think, and they send us to schools that raise us to think exactly like they do.
Doesn't sound too terrible to me.
It wasn't, says Lev, his discomfort building. But they loved God more than they loved me, and I hate them for it. So I guess that means I'm going to hell.
Tell you what, when you get there, save a room for me, okay?
Why? What makes you think you're going there?
I don't, but just in case. Gotta plan your contingencies, right?
2 days later, they find themselves in the town of Scottsburg, Indiana. Well, at least Lev finally knows what state they're in. He wonders if maybe this is Sci-Fi's destination, but Sci hasn't said anything either way. They've left the railroad tracks, and Sci-Fi tells Lev they have to go south on county roads until they can find tracks heading in that direction. Sci hasn't been acting right. It began the night before. Something in his voice. Something in his eyes, too. At first, Lev thought it was his imagination, but now, in the pale light of the autumn day, it's clear that Sci-Fi isn't himself. He's lagging behind Lev instead of leading. His stride is all off, more like a shuffle than a strut. It makes Lev anxious in a way he hasn't been since before he met Sci-Fi.
Are you ever going to tell me where we're going?
Lev asks, figuring that maybe they're close, and maybe that's why Sci's acting weird. Sci-Fi hesitates, weighing the wisdom of saying anything. Finally, he says,
We're going to Joplin. That's in southwest Missouri, so we still got a long way to go.
In the back of his mind, Lev registers that Sci-Fi has completely dropped his old Umber way of talking. Now he sounds like any other kid Lev might have known back home. But there's also something dark and throaty about his voice now, too. Vaguely menacing, like the voice of a werewolf before it turns.
What's in Joplin? Lev asks.
Nothing for you to worry about.
But Lev is beginning to worry. Because when Sci-Fi gets where he's going, Lev will be alone again. This journey was easier when he didn't know the destination. As they walk, Lev can tell Sci's mind is somewhere else. Maybe it's in Joplin. What could be there? Maybe a girlfriend moved there. Maybe he had tracked down his birth mother. Lev has worked up a dozen reasons for Sci-Fi to be on this trip, and there's probably a dozen more he hasn't even thought of. There's a main street in Scottsburg trying to be quaint, but just looking tired. It's late morning as they move through town. Restaurants are gearing up for the lunch crowd.
So, are you going to use your charms to get us a free meal? Or is it my turn to try?
Lev asks. He turns to Sci, but he's not there. A quick scan of the shops behind him and Lev sees a door swinging closed. It's a Christmas store, its windows all done up in green and red decorations, plastic reindeer, and cotton snow. Lev can't imagine Sci has gone in there, but when he peers in the window, there he is, looking around like a customer. With the weird way Sci-Fi has been acting, Lev has no choice but to go in as well. It's warm in the store and it smells of artificial pine. It's the kind of scent they put on cardboard air fresheners. There are fully trimmed aluminum Christmas trees all around, displaying all sorts of holiday decorations,
each tree with a different theme. In another time and place, Lev would have loved wandering through a store like this. A saleswoman eyes them suspiciously from behind the counter. Lev grabs Sai's shoulder.
Come on, let's get out of here.
But Sai shakes him off and goes over to a tree that's decorated all in glittering gold. He seems mesmerized by all the bulbs and tinsel. There's the slightest twitch right beneath his